Welcome, everyone, to our Ontology-Based Standards Initiative. Today is October the 25th, 2012. Peter Yim and I are co-chairing this first of two sessions. We are delighted to welcome all of you and hope that this leads to some very fruitful discussion, which I believe that it will. So, Peter, if you would turn to slide two, just a little bit about the Ontology-Based Standards Initiative. This is a joint initiative of OASIS, the Object Management Group, a number of the ISO standards working groups, including but not limited to SC32, which is the metadata standards working group that Denise Worzel is the convener of, also the IAOA, the OOR initiative, and the Ontolog Forum. And the idea here is it's a collaborative effort to drive ontology-based standards agenda across the standards development community, including Ontolog and related systems communities. And it's a continuing effort which we initiated back in 2009 at the Ontology Summit, and are really hoping we'll start to pick up some steam at this point. So we've organized a couple of sessions, virtual sessions, to attempt to move that agenda forward. It's quite timely given work that's going on both at OASIS and at the Object Management Group, which you'll be hearing about over the course of these two telecons. The first of these today is really to launch the series and talk about some of the work that Ken Bukloski and Eric Chan have been doing on the ICOM standards, and then we'll continue on November the 8th, 2 weeks from now, to discuss a couple of initiatives at the Object Management Group, including one to map a date-time vocabulary and ultimately the SBVR standard to OWL, and also some ongoing work to develop infrastructure interfaces to support knowledge-based interoperability across a number of different platforms. So with that said, Peter, if you would turn to slide three, please. So today, what we're doing is we're initiating this mini-series with the first call. And again, as I mentioned, the focus today is going to be primarily on this OASIS ICOM effort, but we also have a number of folks representing the various standards communities here with us today. And to turn to slide four to kick that effort off, we are delighted to have with us Jim St. Pierre, who is the Deputy Director of the Information Technology Laboratory at NIST. Following Jim's opening remarks, we will have slide five, please, a little bit of introduction to each of the various communities that are participating with us today, including Mr. Chet Ensign from OASIS, Mr. Andrew Watson from the Object Management Group, Denise Worzel from the ISO JTC1 SC32 Metadata Standards Working Group, Professor Michael Gruninger from IAOA, Professor Ken Bukloski from Northeastern University representing the OOR community, and Dr. Leo Oberst from MITRE representing the Ontolog Forum. And so we'll hear a little bit from each of them. And once we have had a bit of introductory comments from the standards community, then on slide six, we'll jump into the meat of our session today with an overview from Michael Gruninger on augmenting standards with ontologies, and that will be followed by the shared experiences discussion from Ken Bukloski and Eric Chan on their work on ICOM. And with that, what I would like to do at this point is turn the floor over to Jim St. Pierre with his opening remarks. Welcome, and thank you so very much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Thanks for the introduction, and this is really great to be here. virtually. And Chuck Romine, our ITL director, sends his regards. He really wishes he could have been here. He planned to be, but unfortunately got called away. And so I'm sure you can understand these things happen. So I'm very happy to open this mini-series on ontology-based standards. As Chuck Romine, our ITL director, said in his welcoming address in the April Ontology Summit, we're moving towards, we're going to see the movement from data-intensive computing to knowledge-intensive computing with heterogeneous systems exchanging data, information, and knowledge. But to effectively work in this environment, you know, we realize that we will need to look at better ways of communication. As Chuck indicated earlier, ontologies are going to play an increasingly important role with that. I think everyone on the call appreciates that. Because of the rigor they provide, semantic models, which rely on ontologies, will help in the specification, validation, conformance testing, and interoperability testing of standards. And in this, we're already involved in using ontologies for information exchange. For example, some of our initial work that we're doing on the Materials Genome Initiative and other ongoing work we have related to biomedical and healthcare domains. So I think it's clear, you know, we really believe that your mini-series on ontology-based standards is very timely, and I just want to, welcome everybody and wish you every success in your efforts towards developing ontology-based standards, and I hope you have a terrific virtual meeting. So thank you very much.
Thank you. This is terrific to have you. And we really appreciate the sponsorship and leadership that NIST has provided in this area. With that, I think what I'd like to do then is turn the floor over to our guests from the various communities, and please welcome Mr. Chet Ensign from OASIS.
Thank you very much. Likewise, it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Chet Ensign. I'm the Director of Standards Development at OASIS. I'm actually here on behalf of the executive director, Laurent Lisha. He's actually in the air on an airplane even as we speak, and so he couldn't attend today, but he did ask me to come in and speak on his behalf. So, Peter, if you could go to slide 2. I'm sure you're all familiar with OASIS. OASIS has been around since 1993. It was originally formed as SGML Open, but since about 1996, it's been a broad nonprofit consortium really focused on the development of information standards for the Internet. We represent a global community. We've got about a third of our active members are in Europe. We've got a growing contingent in Asia. We have a little over 70 active technical committees working today on a number of information standards as well as more generic framework models for getting things done. A couple of quick things about what makes OASIS unique in many ways. First is that as an organization, OASIS is member-driven. The technical agenda is not set at the top and doled out. It is set by the members who determine what they want to work on and form technical committees to do it. The members also elect the board of directors. They elect their TC chairs and other leadership, and they elect the OASIS board of directors, which means that the members through the board are really in charge of the overall OASIS process and how it works in the community. I'm a member of the OASIS staff, and my job is basically to serve the members and to ensure that they are helped to work successfully within the overall process, to really ensure the transparency, the auditability, the openness of all of the activities that that take place within OASIS. Next slide. OASIS's mission statement is to drive the development, convergence, and adoption of open standards for the global information economy, information society. And I think that it's those second and third items, convergence and adoption, that really speaks to why we support the ontology-based standards initiative. Peter, if you'll jump to the next slide, slide number 4. Standards don't go very far unless people can find them, understand them, and then adopt them. And in particular, I think the finding and the understanding, the comprehension are two of the very key things that that we all struggle with. Certainly we struggle with it here. How do we make sure that one technical group that is working on a standard involved in security or authentication or identification has its work publicized in a way that other groups with similar interests can be found? One of the interesting things that's starting to happen recently that we've noticed is that technical committees are forming to develop profiles of broader technical standards so they can specifically fine-tune how a standard gets used in a certain specific application. I think that the reason they're doing that in part is because standards have tended to be broad and overlapped. And when you've got three or four potential standards, all of which converge on some area of work that you're trying to do, being able to sort out what they deal with, what their vocabulary is, how you can make that work most effectively in your setting is really critical. Ontologies can help accomplish that, as we just said. They can bring the rigor to the standards to help people understand, you know, what the terminology means. And what I really realized as I was thinking about this for the presentation is they can help standards groups build on what's been done before, not build it all over again. So that's why we are pleased in particular to see some of the existing OASIS initiatives like ICOM and QOMOS, the quantitative units standard, participating and benefiting from this initiative. And last point real quick. We encourage these kinds of adoptions. We have a number of formal liaison relationships at the OASIS organization level, but we also encourage RTCs to adopt liaisons where they find those useful to them as well. And so I think at both the OASIS level and at the individual TC level, you'll see the support of the Ontology-Based Standards Initiative, and we're pleased to be a part of it. Final slide, slide five, just gives you my contact information. Feel free to contact me with any questions about any of the activities here at OASIS. With that, I'll turn the mic back over unless there's any questions.
Terrific. Thank you so very much. I think what we're going to do is hold questions to the end so that we can roll through as quickly as possible. I think a number of you realize how tight today's agenda is. But thank you. And many of us look forward to working with you. And with that, Andrew, would you like to step in and introduce what we're doing at OMG, please?
Of course. Thank you. Well, good afternoon or good morning, everybody, depending on which time zone you're in. My name's Andrew Watson. I'm Technical Director at OMG. Next slide, please. I've got just a few slides, obviously, to give you a very, very brief introduction to some of the work that we're doing here at OMG, both using ontologies and about ontologies. A quick introduction to OMG. In some ways, quite similar to OASIS, we're also a not-for-profit industry consortium. We've been around since 1989, several hundred international members. As you can perhaps tell, I myself am from the UK, and in fact, I'm speaking to you from the dusk of Cambridge in the UK this afternoon. We divide our work in OMG into two broad groups. Our so-called platform work is around technologies that we believe are usable in very many different industries and very many different domains. And of course, we're very well known for our modeling work, such as UML and the metadata framework upon which it's based and business modeling work. And also what we're going to talk about today, some of our ontology work, such as ODM, the ontology definition meta model, and our business modeling languages like SPVR. Meanwhile, we have a number of domain groups who work on particular vertical industries, such as finance, healthcare, and so on. And in each of those areas, or in most of those areas, I think it's fair to say, we are now today doing work that is based on building vocabularies and ontologies, both using OMG standards and externally developed standards. We are not-for-profit, as I mentioned. We take implementations seriously. We don't just develop specifications to sit on a shelf gathering dust. If we don't know of an implementation of one of our specifications, we will withdraw it. The work that we do is free, and as Richard Stallman is fond of saying, that's free both in the sense of free beer and in the sense of free speech. Free beer, all of our specifications are entirely free to download without any payment to anybody. Free speech, to the best of our knowledge, none of our specifications, or with actually one very small exception, none of our specifications require you to license any intellectual property or patents in order to implement them. I can't guarantee that, of course. There could be somebody who's about to pop up with a master patent on the whole idea of metadata or modeling or some key aspect of UML or SDVR that we weren't previously aware of. But as far as we're aware today, all OMG specifications are free to use by everybody without IPR constraints. And just like at Oasis, we are very democratic. Absolutely all of our decisions are taken by our members. Slide 3, please. This is not a complete list of our members, and if any of you work for companies that are, you know, are OMG members and you're not listed here, I apologize. This is just a representative sample to show you that OMG's members are not only technology providers in the IT industry, but also technology users. Banks like State Street, defense companies like General Dynamics, general engineering companies like General Electric, motor manufacturers and so on, like Honda, and so on. Next slide, please, slide 4. We're very proud of the fact that we work actively with other standards organizations. Again, this is not a complete list, but I did just want to call out a couple of the organizations that we do work with. We have PAS status, publicly available specification status, with ISO, or rather specifically with ISO IEC JTC1, and we send many of our specifications to ISO for fast-track adoption as ISO standards, and that's happened with several of our software modeling specifications already, and we hope in the future to send some of our ontology specifications down the same route. We also have a reciprocal membership agreement with several other organizations, including Oasis. And Chess, if you're looking at my slides and your logo looks a little fuzzy, I do apologize. I couldn't find your logo as a vector PDF, so I'll talk to you offline afterwards and hope to get hold of that from you.
Very good.
Next slide, please. Slide 5. OMG's ontology work is driven by an ontology SIG, which rather than working on freestanding ontology specifications, aims to ensure that the work of other OMG groups is, to the greatest extent possible, built on well-established ontology practice and standards. So it assists other groups in developing domain-specific vocabularies and brings together experts in knowledge representation with software engineers working in other areas. It's chaired by Roy Bell, who I believe is on the call today, and Evan Wallace, both of whom represent OMG members. Next slide, please, slide 6. One of the key specifications we have developed in the ontology world is the ontology definition meta model, which aims to bridge between OMG software modeling specifications, UML and MOF, and the ontology world of OWL, topic maps, common logics, and so on. Next slide, please. I'm whistling through these very quickly because I'm aware that I'm probably already have broken my time budget. Another key specification that OMG has developed for ontology work is the Semantics of Business Vocabulary and Rules, which is a precise metamodel specified in our metamodeling framework, MOF, for representing business vocabulary and business rules, but very importantly is mapped onto human-readable text syntaxes. Both of them are in English at the moment, structured English and rule speak. And this produces, this allows us to produce statements that are in something approaching readable English, but have an extremely precise meaning that can, of course, then be mapped onto other modeling frameworks other than MOF through things like ODM. Next slide, please. Slide 8. We have quite a lot of work that's been done using ontology specifications. Date time vocabulary is a great example, and again, I think I see Mark Linehan, who's been a key driver in this standards work from IBM, on the call today. Daytime vocabulary takes what initially sounds like a very simple problem. How do you specify time intervals, dates and times, and formalizes it? And it's only, of course, once you start digging down into the details that you start to realize the complexity of things like what do you do about leap seconds and how do you talk about the transition from the Julian to the Gregorian calendar. Next slide, please. Common terminology services is based on a specification that's been used in the healthcare industry for quite some time for using, managing, and maintaining terminologies, and is now being used in its second version not only in the healthcare industry but also more widely in other domains. Next slide, please. Finally, a slide about some of the work we have currently in progress, specifications that are not finished yet. Application programming interfaces to knowledge bases, RFP, for listing APIs for managing knowledge bases. An ontology for terminology used in the finance industry, which may come to us soon from the EDM Council. Some work on policy and specifying policy for information exchange frameworks, and some work on mapping MOF, our metadata framework, to RDF, supporting linked open data. Next slide, please. Final slide. If you're interested in more information about any of this, obviously this has only been the very briefest of whistle-stop summaries, you can go to our webpage and download any of our specifications for free, as I've mentioned. Any organization is welcome to join OMG to participate in any of the work in progress that seems relevant. We are organizing an Ontology Information Day in near Washington in March. That, again, will be open to anybody who wishes to attend. That will tell you about the OMG, provide an introduction to the ontology work at OMG. And finally, do please feel free to contact either the co-chairs of the ontology group, Evan Wallace or Roy Bell, or myself, Andrew Watson. And I should also mention that Lisa Kendall, who's chairing the call today, is serving on OMG's architecture board and represents, sort of unofficially represents ontology interests at that body, which makes sure that OMG's work takes a consistent approach to using and defining ontologies. Thanks very much indeed, everybody.
Thank you, Andrew. I really appreciate your joining us today. And Denise. So this is Denise Worzel representing the ISO community, and specifically she is the convener internationally for the SC32 working group, which is responsible for all of the metadata standards that come out of the ISO community, and also has been responsible for helping to advance some of our OMG standards through the ISO PASS process. So, Denise?
Okay. Thank you, Lisa. You can go to slide two. As was previously mentioned, we all have sort of a very brief point of speaking here. And so what I was asked to focus on was ontology use in ISO. And from where I sit, which is within the SC32 subcommittee, we do have a focus in metadata on the use of ontologies, and so while I don't have a broad talk today about everywhere that specific ontologies have been developed and standardized, my talk is focused instead on how we promote the use of ontologies to define the meaning of data and other ISO or IT artifacts. So, again, this is a metadata standard, and it would be used to create repositories that link ontology to these IT artifacts in order to define their meaning. If you're interested in various ontologies that have been standardized, that would perhaps be a different talk and for a future time. Okay, so we have two primary areas that are related to the use of ontologies within ISO JTC1, SC32, WG2, and there are two families that represent metamodels for the registration of these various kinds of artifacts. One that you may have heard a lot about because it's been out there a while is 11.179, which is a metadata registry standard. The second of these two families is called the Metamodel Framework for Interoperability, and it's a family of standards with the number 19763. I mean, both of these families rely on the use of ontologies to anchor the meaning, which I mentioned before. Slide three. the basic concept is that you would register that you're holding these various IT artifacts, and you'd make these registers available for people to query, either within your organization or across organizations. And there are some basic attributes that we promote from a metadata perspective that you record about these objects. They fall into the categories of identifiers. There are definitional attributes. There are attributes that define relationships between objects that have been registered. And then there's information about the representation of those objects. So these are, again, at a meta level. There's no content being registered or developed as standards in WG2. These are meta models. And then within those categories, obviously, we would have mandatory attributes, optional, and conditional. Slide 4. So that's sort of just to give you the big picture, that everything I talk about here on this next slide is intended to be recorded in a registry, and it would have those basic attributes that you just saw. Okay, so I tried to put everything on one slide in order to make this talk fast. And what I'm trying to depict here is that between these two standards, 11.179 and 19763, we try to cover the who, what, why, and how aspects of information technology. And then the last layer, or the deepest layer, is describing the data. So what you see on the right-hand side is this notion of domain-specific ontologies, which is what we promote. And when you read our standard documents, they talk about domain-specific ontologies that should be developed, let's say, for transportation industry or healthcare, and that you should organize these ontologies so that there are specific terminologies available or subsets of that ontology available for annotating these various IT artifacts. It's designed so that you can come to a set of registries with a particular role in mind. Let's say you're a software developer and you're looking for existing artifacts that you can use to put together a new application. So the idea is that you can register different roles within the organization. A software developer might be one, and then there would be others. And based on your role, you can kind of drill down through this stack. You can find processes within the organization that have been registered, and then those processes are annotated with specific ontologies. For example, if you have a process that supports reserving a hotel room, or you have a process that supports registering a patient on a clinical trial, you can find these processes and continue to drill down to the very bottom layer and see what data is required in order to support that process. And all of this information, the roles within the organization, the processes, the services, the information models, and the data, have all been annotated, if you follow the standards, have all been annotated with a domain-specific ontology so that the links between these things are defined within the ontology, and you can go back and forth between the ontology and your registry to find the different kinds of artifacts that might meet your needs. Slide 5. So on this slide, what I've done is just substitute down the left-hand side, because each layer in this model has one or more standards that apply to it. And so I put the standard numbers in this slide so that you can see the first two layers are considered role and goal registration. They're addressed by Part 8. I've got links to these different standards at the back of my presentation so you could go read more about them. Some of them are in development. Some of them are already released. Processes are defined by a metamodel in 19763 Part 5. Services are defined in a metamodel 19763 Part 7. And then the last, the blue level at the bottom, is 11179 Part 3, which has been out there for quite a while, and a new standard that's being developed for information models, and that's Part 12. On the right-hand side, an existing standard is 19763 Part 3 for the registration of ontologies. Slide 6. Okay, so in summary, these standards, 11179 MDR, again, are multi-part standards. You can see here that 11179 has 6 parts, a framework, a section for describing classifications. Part 3 is really the meat of 11179. It describes the metadata registry and the basic attributes. And then we have some guidance for forming definitions, naming and identification principles, and guidelines for how you actually support the registration of these artifacts within a registry. So there's some governance kinds of information in Part 6. Slide 7. So with 11179 as a backdrop in terms of defining the registry and its basic attributes, all of the parts of 19763 then extend that model. And you can see here a list of the parts. The last two, Part 12 and Part 13, are relatively new, probably will become standards in 2014. An interesting one there is the last one, the forms model registration. This is, again, an abstraction of a form, and its purpose is so that different groups can exchange electronic forms with a standard structure, and then the content of those forms can be rendered for data collection in different systems and still achieve the same results. So the key part of all of this is that the ontologies help to define these information artifacts that are related, and then once you have the data recorded in your database, you have a pointer to an ontology concept within this structure that tells you what the meaning of that data is. One of the things that we're looking at is sort of an optimal way to take that registered information and express it in RDF so that you have explicit meaning defined for data that has been recorded in these registries as opposed to some of the more implicit ways that you might derive the meaning of data. So we're looking at that and you know, trying to decide whether we should use existing ontologies like FOF and Dublin Core or whether it makes sense to come up with our own RDF vocabulary so that if you are looking for explicitly defined data, you can look for those kinds of triples and interpret them in a different way than you might with more subjective kinds of RDF statements. Slide 8. 11179 is freely available, and I've got the link to the freely available standards here. We've requested that the 19763 family also be made available freely because, again, these are sort of frameworks for developing IT artifacts. You can find more information about each of those parts that I was showing on the prior two slides from the WG2 website. There's a link behind that hypertext there. And then you can go directly to the 11179 and 19763 pages with the two links provided. If you're interested in joining any of the work efforts of the parts that you saw on slides 6 and 7, you can join the U.S. Insights Committee, and the working group in particular that works on these parts is DM32.8. The website is there for more information if you would like to join the U.S. subcommittee. If you're in a different country, then you would have some sort of a parallel organization that is the ISO tag for your country. And I think that's it.
Denise, thank you very, very much. This was a great summary. So everybody knows now where to look to find some of those things, and I think some of those links will provide information that a lot of folks didn't realize there was such depth on. So this is really good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so next, I think to be expedient and because he's also involved in the STIDS conference, as some of you may know, I'm going to skip over to Dr. Leo Oberst from MITRE to talk briefly about our efforts here at Ontolog Forum, and then we'll come back around to Michael if that's all right with everybody. So, Leo?
Thank you. Okay. If you skip to slide 2, a little bit about Ontolog and ontology-based standards, a little historical perspective. Ontolog Forum, we founded it in April 2002. Peter Yim, Kurt Conrad, and I were the co-conveners, are the co-conveners. Our initial activity really was to promote ontological engineering and especially ontologies to support the emerging universal business language standard that was in progress at that time. So three of us presented an overview of ontologies to the UBL Technical Committee in May of that year, 2002, me, Jack Park, and Peter Yim. This actually led to a UBL ontology effort by the Ontolog community, which was sustained for a while, as most of our volunteer activities are, till other things evolved. Ontology Summit 2009 was the next in the series of ontology summits that began in 2006 and 7 and 8, but 2009 was focused on specifically ontology-based standards. So there's links underneath most of these references if you have interest in finding out more information. From Ontology Summit 2009, there was actually an activity that got spawned, a unit of measure ontology standard that went on for 2009 and part of 2010, which was focusing on a quantity and unit of measure ontology-based standard. NIST was involved. A number of people were involved. And again, you can find references. And of course, this effort now, ontology-based standards. So we really have a long history of supporting ontology-based standards here. And actually, from the beginning of Ontolog and prior to Ontolog, a number of us supported ontology-based standards with Steve Ray at NIST, including Michael Gruninger, of course. The role of Ontolog here is, has been and will be really as a community of practice for ontological engineering and applications of it. So we have, of course, a distribution list, but we also have the platform, which Peter Yim graciously provides without charge, whereby we have an environment for new and collaborative ideas like this one that can emerge and be tested. And really, it's kind of a incubator for everything that's related to ontology of interest to the overall Ontolog group. Of course, the Ontology-Based Standards Initiative, we feel, is strategically important, and we fully support it. So thank you for participating.
Terrific. So, Leo, thank you so much. I know you can't be with us all afternoon, hang on, but we really appreciate your participation and guidance. And so with that, I'm going to step back on our agenda and ask Michael Gruninger to step up and talk to us a little bit about IAOA, and then we'll conclude this segment of the discussion with Ken Bukowski on OOR. So, Michael?
Okay, thank you, Lisa. So I'll be speaking on behalf of IAOA, the International Association of Ontology and its Applications. It's not a standards organization. Rather, it's an organization whose purpose is to promote interdisciplinary research, international collaboration, all focused around the notion of ontologies and all the different ways in which ontologies are used. And so within this association, there is a particular committee. If we go to slide 2, please. The Standardization Coordination Committee. And again, following the mission of our general association, the role of this committee is to really be a facilitator, to foster interactions between the ontology community, which itself is quite diverse, as well as the standards communities, of which we've heard already today. So there's that kind of social aspect to it. But also from a technical perspective, this committee is really tasked with facilitating the application of both specific ontologies that are being developed around the world, either in academia, government, or industry, as well as to provide and support ontological analysis, provide resources for this analysis to both existing standards as well as standards that are still under development. So if we go to slide 3, this is just a few of the things that are kind of considered to be within the scope. This is not exclusive, but this is just to give an idea of some of the things that are within the scope. The first idea is looking at standards that actually contain ontologies. So, for example, the process specification language, PSL, which is ISO 18629, includes within it a formal ontology specified in common logic for processes, manufacturing processes, business processes. And similarly, there's ISO 15926, which also is kind of a more upper-level ontology for capturing very kind of high-level common sense concepts, although it's specifically applied and originated within the process industry. Another standard out of W3C is OWL-S, the OWL Service Ontology. And again, this is was a note within W3C, but it contains within it an explicitly axiomatized ontology for web services, written in the web ontology language OWL. A second category of things that are within the scope of this committee are standards that relate in some way to the ontology lifecycle. So the ontology lifecycle being all the tasks that are involved from the requirements analysis for an ontology through the design, analysis, and implementation of ontologies, very analogous to the software lifecycle. So this includes standards specifically used for specifying ontologies, so OWL and Common Logic, It's looking at various projects that deal with repositories. We heard from Denise, so ISO 19763 and 20943, both being developed in the committee she presented. And then also standards projects, one particularly called Onto IOP, which is a project 17347, which focuses on explicitly representing relationships between ontologies and how to do mappings between ontologies. Again, this supports that whole idea of ontology repositories. And then finally, a third point, which is maybe a bit more relevant to today's discussion, I'll mention a few things along this line, are efforts that are trying to use ontologies to augment existing standards and also to harmonize standards. One particular project within TC184SC4 is the IDIOM project. So SC4 is the home of STEP, the Standard for the Exchange of Product Data, and there are other standards within this particular subcommittee that have been developed independently over the years, and the IDIOM project is attempting to use ontologies to harmonize the concepts that are overlapping among the ontologies that were developed within this subcommittee. Slide four, please, the last slide. These are just three of the events, the meetings that we have, this particular committee has hosted over the past year. Last October, Sue Ellen Wright from TC37, which is Terminology and Other Language and Content Resources, gave an overview of ontology work that's happening within that technical committee. That technical committee actually is the home of the Onto IOP project, Ontology Interoperability. In November, Lisa Kendall, our host today, gave an overview of ontology-related metadata standards. And this past spring, Mike Bennett gave a presentation on FIBO, the Financial Services Business Ontology. So the mission of this particular committee within IAOA, very much in line with what we're talking about today, and hopefully there'll be a lot of synergy coming out of these meetings, and we can really progress on this. Again, the fostering interactions between the ontology and standards communities. Thank you.
Terrific. And finally, Ken, if you would step in and give us a quick overview of the OOR activity, and then we'll move from there into the main agenda for our call today.
Good. If you look at slide one, that's just my title slide. I'm one of the founding members of the OOR, and I'm the architecture co-leader. On slide two, just a thought that I came up with, it seems to me that technical standards and ontologies are really pretty closely related. A technical standard is an explicit set of requirements for a system or service. And while they are very often unambiguous, and there's a lot of emphasis today, as we've heard, on being more precise and unambiguous, they're not always completely unambiguous. An ontology is a formalization of concepts and the relationships among them, so it's a fairly general concept as well. And it seems to me that there are very close relationships between these two. When a standard is specified unambiguously, it really is an ontology. Conversely, if an ontology is developed and then accepted by a community, to that community, it is a standard. So these two are very closely related, and the OOR, I think, recognizes this and certainly is very much in favor of supporting connections, close connections between standards and ontologies. Going to slide three, if you look at the OOR goals and objectives, you'll see that the objectives are very similar to this kinds of objectives and needs that that standards have. You need to find them. You need to facilitate repositories for them. You need and we also want multiple implementations of these of the OOR and of the various standards. So when we start looking at the various objectives, you see that there's a lot of commonality in what the OR is trying to achieve and what standards and standards organizations are trying to achieve. And there's some specific standards-based objectives that I think are particularly interesting, such as developing workflows, enforcement policy, and interoperability. And some of the things that I'll be talking about later on when I give my other talk on experiences that we've had at ICOM. Going to the last slide, just list some of the use cases that I think are would be very useful for standards. This is also related to the kinds of things I'll be talking about later on. Notice that there's standards bodies and standards technical committee are very involved in reviewing and evaluating their standards. So reviewing and evaluating ontologies is also part of the OOR use cases. The OOR has workflows and policies. Many of these are based on the ISO 11179 that was talked about in an earlier talk today. So, again, there are many common features between the various standards that have been specified today about standards repositories and the OOR ontology repository. So with that, I'll close. And Elisa?
Yes, thank you so much, Ken. So this is great. So I think we've now heard kind of an overview of a number of the standards bodies that are participating in our work here, which is tremendous. The fact that we have so much synergy going on is really very important and essential to making progress. And also, for those of us who tend to feel like one-armed paper hangers all the time, running from standards group to standards group, it seems that anything that we can do to collaborate and limit overlap and to work together to achieve common goals is much more efficient than not doing so. And so I truly appreciate everybody who has presented from the different organizations, and I think we're really coming to a point where we have a lot of synergy and a lot of folks that are willing to jump into the fray, which is fantastic. And so with that, I think I'll turn the floor over to Michael, who's going to share more with us on some perspective on augmenting standards with ontologies. Michael?
Thank you, Lisa. So I just have a few musings just wanted to talk about today. The main star of the show today is Ken and Eric's presentation. So I just wanted to kind of give a few ideas, some of the things that we're working on specifically here at the University of Toronto and the Stendic Technologies Laboratory, but also some of the other work that's being done that we've encountered and with working with various colleagues through IALA in particular. So the basic focus of this idea of augmenting standards with ontologies, to be able to begin with the standards as the seed and then to fertilize them with ontologies, maybe. Yeah, that's a different metaphor. Okay, so let's go to slide 2. So there are 4 main things I just wanted to talk about briefly is the role of this idea of augmenting standards as a way of initiating ontology design and evaluation. Second being the role that ontology integration can play in looking at standards harmonization. This in particular kind of interacts with the idea of semantic integration of software systems. So both standards and ontologies have really been motivated by the desire to have such integration of software systems. And then I'll just conclude with a few words about ontology repositories and the role that they can play. So on slide 3 is, kind of again, looking at this idea of ontologies as the seed for building new ontologies. We really feel like within our laboratory that existing manufacturing and information standards really provide an excellent platform for this because essentially the terminology of a particular standard and the intended semantics of that standard as captured within the standard is the result of consensus within the community, often a very hard-fought consensus within a particular community that developed the standard. And so the idea is to begin with that consensus. So very often one of the challenges in ontology design, just kind of in a greenfield sort of situation, is that a lot of time gets spent in working with domain experts and trying to understand what the intended semantics are. And then once that requirements analysis and gathering has been done, then people can start saying, well, here are the axioms I think should be in the ontology. And that process takes a very, very long time. And so the idea would be, well, let's take advantage of all the work that has happened within the standards communities, which are doing precisely that. They're doing that kind of requirements gathering and analysis, and that would then be input into the beginning then of the ontology life cycle, where we could begin to say, well, okay, here are the concepts that were identified within this standard. Here are the different relationships among these concepts identified within the standard. Now we can begin to actually formally specify the intended meanings of those terms and their relationships within a particular ontology. So, for example, if we go to slide 4, there are several standards that are supporting interoperability among specifically manufacturing software systems. I mentioned these some of these before, STEP, NC data, mandate, manufacturing data exchange. These are all standardized within TC184SC4 within ISO. There's also in SC5, there's a manufacturing software capability standard, ISO 16100. And then a couple of other ones I was going to be mentioning in a few slides later on here are more specific standards all the way down to the factory floor. So you can kind of see here that there's a broad range levels of abstraction among all of these standards, but none of these standards have an explicit ontology. So again, a lot of documentation in the case of STEP and mandate. Many of these concepts are specified within the language called Express. But Express is not really intended to be an ontology representation language. It doesn't really have a semantics in the sense that OWL and Common Logic do. And so we feel that these standards, this representative subset of standards, really represents a great opportunity to start kind of designing new ontologies in a way providing some platform and some objectives for the broader ontology community within academia, government, and industry to maybe, you know, kind of take a look at these. And again, the ontologies would not replace the standard. That's why the title of my talk is Augmenting. Ontologies do not replace standards. They merely take terminology that is defined within the standard, although that terminology is specified in a natural language, such as English and or French, in the case of ISO. And, you know, as some of the Ken will be talking about later on, you know, there's a lot of ambiguity that exists there. With that ambiguity, there can be problems with conformance testing. There can be problems with implementations. There can be just multiple possible interpretations of particular concepts. And the idea would be that the ontologies that are built on top of these standards would assist in automated conformance checking. It would assist in the evaluation of applications that use the standard and would also, you know, be able to identify cases where there are different interpretations, and in some cases not to say, well, this is the one true interpretation, but merely to identify that there are multiple possible interpretations and actually explicitly identify them. I think very often ambiguity in itself is not the issue. The problem is when I assume that you are using the same interpretation that I am, and it's that assumption that often leads to breakdowns within interoperability. So again, the idea is these ontologies are intended to capture the intended semantics as the standard developers have specified them in a natural language. On slide 5, I just have a few other examples. These are some standards that are related to enterprise modeling. The first two standards are dealing with the Somoza framework, the Computer Integrated Manufacturing Open Systems Architecture Framework. And I have one of my graduate students, Carmen Tree, is working on actually doing what we're talking about here, to provide extensions of these standards, provide definitions for the concepts in these standards using Common Logic, as well as using other existing ontologies that are available, such as PSL, the Process Specification Language. There's two other standards here I mentioned, Constructs for Enterprise Modeling, Framework for Enterprise Modeling. These aren't ISO standards, but have been developed within Europe. But they also have kind of property where they provide a lot of terms, but just don't provide any explicitly formal definitions in an ontology or presentation language. So again, very fertile ground for new ontology development. On slide 6, I want to move to the second topic I was talking about, which is ontology integration. And so again, the problem here is that many of the standards that I've mentioned above have overlapping concepts, and each standard often has a slightly different intended semantics for these concepts. So STEP, the standard for the exchange of product data, will represent the notion of a resource. Similarly, Mandate, manufacturing data exchange, has a similar notion of resource. STEP has a notion of process. PSL has a notion of process. But because these standards were developed at different times, within the context of different industries, different requirements, these are overlapping terms. I mean, both of these standards have the same term. But if you look carefully at the standard, you can see by reading the text that there really is a different intended semantics for these concepts. And so it's this clash of semantics that arises from this a lack of explicit ontology is really leads to breakdowns in interoperability. The other issue too is if some of these formalisms, let's say such as STEP and mandate, which are kind of specified using a language like Express, well, this really isn't quite adequate for actually representing ontologies, you know, such as languages like OWL and Common Logic. And so what happens is that these standards can be very difficult to verify, complex to maintain, and as people are kind of discovering, it's also costly to harmonize. One particular example on slide 7. So these are the two standards I mentioned above. These are standards for cutting tools. So if an analogous, you can kind of think of, you know, like if you have a hand drill, the tool holder is the drill itself, and the insert is like the drill bit. And it's very interesting. I mean, you would never think of using either of those by themselves. If you're going to be doing any application of drilling, you have to have both a tool holder and the insert. The thing is, these are both different standards, and I kind of have here a diagram from a document that's trying to analyze these standards. And both standards represent different properties of the tool holder and the insert using particular codes supplemented by geometry diagrams. And it is far from obvious how these are related to each other. You can kind of see an attempt to show how code 25 seems to correspond to code G below, and the second 25, even though it's referring to a different diagram, maybe refers to the same thing. So the idea of augmenting standards with ontologies would be the idea that we can use the relationships between ontologies to then assist in the integration of standards that kind of are augmented with those ontologies. So on slide 8, I just kind of mentioned, again, the idea of the third point I wanted to talk about was both standards and ontologies have an objective of not just existing by themselves, but supporting the semantic integration of software systems. And so when we're talking about semantic integration, what we're talking about is software applications that are exchanging information between them. And we wanted to support that exchange in a way that preserves the semantics, the idea being that anything that I can deduce within my particular software application after translating it, if it preserves the semantics, then you should be able to deduce the same thing. If there are certain scenarios that are consistent with my software application after translation, they should be consistent with your application as well. So really, in order to do this in the context of ontologies, we have mappings between logically equivalent concepts and within that. And so integration of software systems then becomes equivalent to the problem of, first of all, generating these mappings between the ontologies, determining they're correct, and then providing a kind of a way to actually execute these mappings via translators. So again, on slide 9, right, what we can do is by providing ontologies for standards, we can, you know, then enable the integration of the software applications that are using the standards. So since the standards themselves were developed using use cases and scenarios from their end domain, the idea would be to kind of look at, use those domains as well as the standards when developing ontologies. So we have ontologies for supply chain management, enterprise integration. And so the hope would be that those can prevent the barriers to interoperability. I just noticed I missed a slide here talking about repositories. I'll just put that in the chat after I'm done. The Colore Common Logic Ontology Repository, I was just going to mention that. In Toronto, we're building this repository for Common Logic Ontologies. We have currently over 600 different ontologies specified in Common Logic, primarily aimed at providing, supporting generic concepts such as time, process, shape, space, and geometry. The idea being that these then provide, the generic ontologies provide the foundations for building the ontologies for the standards that I mentioned earlier. And then these in turn, these generic ontologies, they're actually based upon more mathematical ontologies. This is how we actually verify that our ontologies are correct and complete with respect to their intended semantics. I'll put the URL for Calore in the chat after I'm done here. But my last slide, just slide 10, are just some challenges. So within Calore right now, I see we have over 600 ontologies. Although the time ontologies is a very mature field, we'll hear, I think, in the next session, Mark Linehan looking at the daytime vocabulary ontology that was developed in OMG. There are also several efforts at process ontologies. I think maybe where we're a bit weak in the ontology community, and which are very essential in the, particularly in the standards I mentioned earlier, is looking at shape and geometry, and other related concepts like topology, connectedness, parts of, and things like that. I think we really need to have a lot of work being done within the ontology community to kind of develop these generic ontologies that then can be extended if we want to develop ontologies for standards such as STEP, mandate, the cutting tools, cutting tool inserts, and concepts like that. And then, and really, but the other big question is, well, what additional generic ontologies do we need? And I say this is where using standards as the basis for ontology design will really help us in the ontology community identify where are we missing ontologies? What is the new frontier in ontology design that we need in order to augment these existing and developing standards? And then a final point here is just when we talk about evaluating ontologies, we're often talking about evaluating ontologies with respect to their kind of intended semantics. I think when we're looking at evaluating ontologies for standards, I'm manufacturing just because that's, say, the department I'm in, I think there's some big open issues here in how to evaluate whether an ontology is correct and complete with respect to the standard that it is augmenting. I think these are some big research challenges here. Definitely something for ongoing discussions. Thank you.
Fabulous. Thank you very much, Michael. I think, you know, this work is essential to moving things forward, and the fact that we might be able to achieve additional interoperability across some of our systems by taking this kind of an approach is exactly what many of us have hoped for a long time. And finally, for the remainder of our time today, I would like to introduce Dr. Ken Bukloski and Eric Chen, who are going to talk with us about some of their work in extracting ontologies from standards, in particular through the ICOM activity. I think what they're doing is fantastic, and am very interested in hearing other people's views on this, and so hopefully we will have time for questions in general towards the end. So with that, I will turn the floor over to Ken and to Eric.
Thank you, Lisa. If you go to slide 2 of our presentation, you'll see the summary there of what we experienced when we were working on the ICOM standard and attempting to extract representations in various languages. So I list a few of the representations that I'll be talking about in the talk later on. The OWL, RDF, XML schema, SQL, and Java, which you might not think of as being ontology languages, but we need those because we need to have capabilities such as persistence, transformers, and even things like web services and wikis that are pretty important for the field that ICOM is concerned with, which is collaborative systems. And what we found is that multiple representations do have many advantages, helping us to correct inconsistencies, enrich the standard, and also enhancing interoperability. And these extractions and transformations were automated, and our hope is that similar techniques may be applicable to other standards. So going to slide 3, there I give a brief introduction to the ICOM standard. It's a framework for collaboration and also social networking. It's an OASIS technical committee, and it's currently in the process of finalizing its committee specification. It builds on quite a few existing standards and technologies, so from the start it was concerned with interoperability, and it's even essentially what the concern is in the very name of the standard integrated object model for interoperable services. The core module models a number of entities that certainly are important for collaboration. And it also has extension modules for many other activities that are sometimes used in collaborative work environments. Going to slide 4, that lists representation languages. But there are a great many ways to express a standard. The usual one is in a natural language, such as English or French. There's also this new concept of a controlled natural language, such as the SBVR, that Elisa has talked about already today, and I believe we're going to be talking about in the next session. There are also graphical languages, object-oriented programming languages, data languages for persistence and also for other purposes. OData is a recent technical committee in at OASIS that's concerned with extracting data from websites. And then of course we have the ontology languages people in the ontolog community know a great deal about. Now the interesting thing is that these languages, these ways of representing, have many purposes and many advantages, and so it actually makes sense to be expressing a standard in more than one, or even if we possibly can, every relevant representation language. So that was one of the motivations that we had, is to enhance all of these objectives of the technical committee and the ICOM standard, was to express this language in such a way that it would maximize its interoperability and applicability. Now going to slide 5, there are a number of conceptual levels for information. There are various meta levels. You can represent data, of course, in the in OMG, that's in MOF terminology, that's the M0 level. But then there's the language of the data, that schema, that's M1 level. And then there's the M2 level, which talks about the structure of the language, and includes any metadata about that language. So there are these multiple meta levels, and it's helpful to talk about what the meta level is that one is transforming, to be clear on what is going on. There's actually very different issues and problems arise at each of these levels. And one can also, as I mentioned there, and we did experience this, you sometimes cross meta levels, taking something at one meta level and treating it as being at another meta level. There are also issues concerning whether you're just going in one direction in your transformation, or whether it's actually two-directional. Since the languages are not usually equally expressive, it may be necessary to add annotations in order to be able to achieve some degree of invertibility. Alright, so then moving on to slide 6, I give a little outline, a little diagram, to indicate the kind of M2 level or metadata extraction that we did with ICOM. And in fact, I did this with all of the OASIS standards documents. I managed to crawl the OASIS site and extracted the metadata from 1,405 OASIS standards documents. That doesn't mean 1,405 standards, because different standards will have more than one draft. five of them, in fact, were the ICOM drafts. So this is one example of the kinds of things that one can extract from a standard to the level of an ontology. Then moving on to slide 7, a somewhat more complicated diagram. This is now at the M1 level, the schema level. So in the center of this was the ICOM standard in English, but it's a very structured, relatively structured kind of English. So we started with extracting RDF as well as various OWL profiles. It was all of the OWL2 profiles as well as OWLDL. So there's a whole collection of different OWL ontologies that were extracted depending on which profile you preferred. And then also extracted the XML schema representation. And then at that point, you just used XJC to get Java, a Java representation of the standard. Of course, the intention is that we will eventually, and that's why it's a dashed line here, we're going to have a direct translation to Java, at which point the XJC can be used as a means of checking that our translation was correct. Incidentally, there are other tools out there for doing transformations. For instance, ODM can transform between OWL and other languages, and these can be very useful for this transformation process, as well as doing checking. So the idea is that the more of these extractions and transformations you have, the more you can start checking consistency and checking conformance with the standard. So there are many advantages to having these extractions and transformations. From Java, in turn, you can use JPA, Java Persistence API, to get an SQL representation of your standard, and at that point actually have the code for persistently representing data. And then you can use WSGN to get WSDL and hence a web services. WSDL is for SOAP, and then there's a little tool called SOAP REST that allows us to get REST as well. Some of the work that is still in prototype stage now are transformations to Common Logic and to a podcast ontology, so that you can have use podcasts in your collaboration. XSLP for doing the M0 level transformations, and Purple Semantic Media Wiki to have a means of mapping your collaboration information to a wiki environment for performing your collaboration within a wiki, including a good example of this is, of course, the Ontolog forum, which uses a wiki, and we are planning on doing migration to that framework for Ontolog forum. Moving on to slide 8, then this shows some of the data transformations that are being considered here. The JPA, going from Java objects to a relational database system, Java Web Services to go to XML, XSLT to go from XML to RDF, and then imports and exports to these other platforms. Okay, so let me go now and show you our experiences and some examples of what happened when we did all of this kind of extraction and transformation. In slide 9, there is the first page of the OASIS standard for ICOM. So you can see that it's a document. It's actually a Word document. And that is the authoritative document. The authoritative standard. It's also available in HTML and PDF, and these were obtained by exporting the Word document. And moving on to slide 10, then you can see the extraction of the metadata that was on slide 9 into an XML format. So a simple XML format there. So the same information is on these two slides here, 9 and 10. Okay, so let's get an idea of what you can do. Effectively, what you're doing is doing an extraction at the M2 level, because this is at the level of the language, in this case, the ICOM language. You could also view it as being something that crosses meta levels, because I'm taking the M2, going from the M2 level down to a data level here. And now that it's on a data level, you can then perform transformations on this into other representation languages like RDF and OWL, and then use query languages like Sparkle to get to extract information from the whole database, basically, of all OASIS standards. So moving on to slide 11. Then let's dig in a little bit more deeply and look at an example of one of the ICOM classes. This notation that's used here for describing this class in the Word document is the CMIS notation. CMIS is another, CMIS is another standard at OASIS. So you can see it's actually pretty well structured, so it's not really that difficult to extract the information. It wasn't necessary to do a great deal of a natural language processing to get this information. Although it was not that easy. Going from a Microsoft Word document into and extracting this information was not entirely trivial. So then if you look at slide 12, this is a continuation of the previous slide. These are properties of the access control list class on slide 11, and you see some of the properties there that it has. Actually, in this case, those are the only two properties it has. So this is an entire specification of that particular class. Most classes have many more properties. So you can see the kind of representation in the standards, in the standard. Then on slide 13, you see the ICOM class written out in OWL. I hope that's readable. It's kind of the text there might be a small font, but you can see the kind of thing that then gets extracted. How the information gets taken from these two, the documents and shown in those two slides to the ICOM, to the class in OWL. One of the things that we did was not only to produce the class, so there's an OWL class right there, and then, of course, there are OWL properties that I show on the slide 14. But we'd be also, if you look very down at the bottom, we have we have the metadata for the class that was extracted. So this enables one to do kind of meta-level operations in OWL by basically shifting the meta-level down from the M1 level down to the M0 level, so that now at the you can perform just ordinary data operations on the meta information, something that is not really that easy to do in OWL, which is very strict about its meta levels. So it was, anyway, it was just convenient to be able to put this in here. For one thing, it also allowed us to put information in the OWL ontology that doesn't actually make sense in OWL. I'll talk a little bit about some of those issues a little later on, and this gets into this idea that since languages don't actually have the same capabilities, the same features, it is necessary to do some annotation in order to capture all of the information in one language. So again, in slide 14, you can see the properties the two properties for this class. And these properties also have meta information about them. I didn't show that here. Then on slide 15, I can now talk a little bit about the issues that were raised and the lessons that we learned. Of course, the first step was extracting. I found it was a lot easier to try to extract it from HTML than directly from the doc file. In the process, I found that, you find all kinds of errors in the HTML document. This apparently is a common thing in the on the web. Fortunately, I managed to find a rather robust HTML parser that could parse in spite of all these little problems in the HTML. Then, in the process of doing the transformation, my program did all of the various inferences and transitive closures, which enabled one to get a really a picture of what was in the ontology in some complete sense. Of course, not as complete as OWL can do. I did not do every conceivable inference. I limited just the ones that have a reasonable computational complexity. And of course, as I mentioned already, metadata was generated. And then I performed quite a few consistency checks, and this is one of the most interesting aspects of it, is that this allowed us to find a lot of bugs in the standard. Misspellings, for example, were actually quite easy to find. Not easy to find if you're just reading through the document. So anyway, most of these checks were just errors, others were only warnings, but even in the case of warnings, they were useful because they helped us improve the standard. Inference properties were an interesting problem because in the standard, they were, as in the case of UML, they have the scope. Their scope is the class. So this made for some interesting issues translating to OWL, where the properties are first class. And there, it's not that easy to do an inverse kind of relative to a class. It's really kind of difficult to achieve if you treat all of those properties in their scope as being one big property. However, in principle, it's only a naming issue. If you treat all of these properties as being independent properties, then there's no problem handling this in OWL. However, if you do that, then you have a problem with interoperability because now you're treating these as independent properties. So it does actually become a significant issue in spite of the fact that there is, at least in theory, a way of dealing with it. Slide 16 has still more issues. One interesting, and it's kind of interesting, is at first I was using OWL 2, and we didn't detect this problem. We had some enumeration instances that were the same name as the class of that enumeration, a different class. And it's allowed in OWL 2 to have an instance that's the same name as a class. But it's not allowed in OWL 1. So when I started doing checks using OWL 1, suddenly this problem arose. And so we made the change to avoid these conflicts. But in fact, it's probably a good idea to do it even for all two, because actually those conflicting names were not actually directly related to one another in the way that was envisioned in OWL2. The enumeration instance was not actually a kind of reification of the class. Another issue that came up because of the scoping of properties was these properties that were effectively chimeric, meaning depending on the context, they are different properties, rather different properties. In particular, we encountered an example where sometimes it was object property and other times it was a data type property, and it depended on its context. And of course, as I already mentioned, inverses also can depend on the domain. And of course, range constraints can depend on the domain. So there are a lot of issues with properties that are tricky to handle, but for the most part, what we did was just reconcile these by making sure that properties didn't have any chimeric properties, chimeric aspects that would prevent translation into OWL. Another one was interesting was abstract categories. It turned out that in some cases the intention was that these categories were the union of their immediate subcategories. But in other cases they weren't. The intention varied, and as a result we actually felt that we needed to extend the standard to be able to specify what the full intention was. And of course, I discovered that each OWL2 profile imposes various restrictions on what you can express, so every OWL2 profile has its own translation problems. And moving on to slide 17, the Purple Semantic Media Wiki is a bundle. It's basically a media wiki bundle of various plugins that add semantic and fine-grained access features. One of the things we wanted to do, and I'll be talking about that some examples in a moment, was to map ontologies to Purple Semantic Media Wiki. Being a semantic framework, it's a semantic wiki after all, it has the capability for expressing semantics, but it's somewhat more limited than the other ontology languages. And nevertheless, we found a way that seems to be an effective way of translating these ontologies to this semantic media wiki framework. Classes were mapped to the category notion. Properties are specified with a template for the class. Semantic Media Wiki also has a separate notion of property. Forms were also used for this purpose. Forms use one or more templates for data entry and display, and we just generate one form for each template so that one can display and enter data in the wiki. And then we have the advantage now that we can use Sparkle queries in Semantic Media Wiki to build applications very quickly. And I'll show an example of this where it can be quite effective in a collaboration environment. And so we're in the process of automating the schema mapping and data import for ICOM as well as other ontologies into the Semantic Media Wiki framework. Now moving on to slide 18. So here I'll show an example of how we did this transformation. So again, going back to the access control list example from before, here's how it was translated into the context of semantic media wiki. So a template for access control list was generated that is shown on the slide 18. So you can see the difference between these two properties here. One of them is a single value property and the other one is a multi-value property. So that's the template. Then to do actual data entry, you need to use the templates to create a form. So on slide 19, I show the generated form for access control list. Looks very similar. Of course, it specifies the template. And of course, now you can use that template, that same template, to create other forms, using, that require an access control list. Finally, on slide 19, you see the category definition. Basically just takes the description of the category and, puts a link in for, to the form for creating an access control list. Then, so this, you can see the transformation into the semantic media wiki is well, perhaps not the most readable, but hopefully it's fairly straightforward. Then on slide 20, this is what you actually see when you open up this data entry form. So what I'm doing there is I want to create an access control list named ACL1, and it opens up, you see this screen here, and then you have the ability then to enter the attributes, these properties. Okay, it's a typical wiki page. Then on slide 21, talk about some examples of applications that that could be developed, and these are what's impressive about these is how quickly you can develop these applications. One of them is a podcast ontology that is developed by one of my students, Sumit Purohit, and a calendar application, and this was developed by Yuan Yin. There's a link on that page to show more information about it, as well as a demo of this. So click on that, or go to that page and you'll see more information about, how one develops, templates, forms, and, categories in Semantic Media Wiki. An important point here, the Ontolog wiki content is in the process of being migrated to Purple Semantic Media Wiki so that the Ontolog forum wiki will have semantics. The other possibility, this is also considering the possibility of moving the email content as well to a more semantic framework. Eric Chan has been working on that, and some very nice results already have been presented in previous Ontolog forums. So hopefully you'll be seeing that soon. I think the target date for that is in December. So you may actually be seeing this on the Ontolog forum wiki in just a couple of months, maybe even just within a month. So moving on to slide 22, there's what you'll see if you go to the calendar application. Actually, it's the bottom part is what you see. The top part is the Sparkle query that shows you how this calendar was actually constructed by just putting in that query. It's essentially it's a wiki format for a Sparkle query. and then specifies what format you want it in. So it's really quite impressive that such a small query is sufficient to produce this very nice application, very useful application in the context of collaboration. Then slide 23, I show the podcast ontologies being developed by Summit, and the idea here is to migrate annotations and metadata for podcasts from an ICOM compliant framework. In particular, we want to annotate the podcasts that are produced by the Ontolog Forum, including, I guess, today's session is going to be a podcast, and it'll be annotated using this ontology. And finally, the last slide, slide 24, just a brief conclusion there. This shows that automated extraction shows a lot of promise. I might add there's, in addition to improving the standards and rapidly developing applications, there's also the advantage that one can automate the process of checking conformance with standards, something that at the moment is being done kind of on an ad hoc basis by every standards committee. It seems we may be able to automate a lot of that rather, you know, intensive operation on the part of members of the standards committee. So another interesting point is that these representations, as you've seen, can be both declarative and procedural. So you, in addition to representing it in a declarative language or graphical language like UML, you can also represent it procedurally and even automate the process of developing applications. And of course, these transformations and mappings are automated and occur at all these meta levels and between meta levels as well. And as a result, we see that OOR fits naturally as a basis for developing and supporting standards as well as ontologies in this kind of framework. So the hope is that the OOR will support multiple representations and the ability to put plugins for adding your own representation transformations and your own extractions. So the OOR would be a basis for doing this in an automated way, you know, in the future for standards as well as for ontologies. Thank you.
Thank you. Elisa? Yes, I'll step in. We will move into the open Q&A and discussion segment now. For those who are familiar, the trigger to do it is to click on the hand button on the chat screen. So if you're not in the chat room, that's the first thing you want to do. Secondly, if you're in the chat room, on the lower right corner, right below the list of attendees, there's a little hand button. If you click on that, your hand will show up. And if you click on it again, it toggles the hand button off. So if anyone who would like to make a remark or have questions to ask, click on the hand button now. That way we can queue people up and Elisa will call upon everyone. And when it is your turn, try finding out if you can be heard. Get acknowledgement before you start. And since we didn't have a chance to introduce everyone, so maybe when you start, tell us who you are. So please click on the hand button now. I can see three people on the queue now. While I have the floor, I actually have a few remarks to make before I pass the floor over to Rosario. First, I noticed Steve Ray is among us today, and I'm so happy he is here and he is active. For those of you who might have missed the remark in the earlier presentations, Steve was with NIST when we started the Ontology Summit, and he was the general chair and the editor of the 2009 Toward ontology-based standards, Ontology Summit. So he goes back a long way, has been a pioneer, and has been driving that effort since. And, of course, NIST has been very instrumental to getting us all started. That's the first thing I want to say. A second thing, it was mentioned again two or three times earlier, is about that work called the OASIS Qomos Technical Committee, the Quantity and Units of Measure Ontology Standard that Ontolog did start after Ontology Summit 2009. It matured a bit, and since Ontolog is not an SDO, we are not a standards development organization, it was expedient to move that whole work over to an SDO, and the SDO of choice, because of its openness and relative flexibility, we took that over to OASIS. Slightly unfortunate situation, that work went dormant for a little bit. And this is the good news. More recently, Steve, actually, who was chair of that TC, asked if I could step in, and I checked with Pat Hayes, whom I believe would be the one single most important person that needs to be on that team, and Pat agreed that we are jointly going to resume work on Qomos, and the target is to come up with a deliverable in CLIF, the common logic interchange format. And of course, in parallel, OMG has been doing work in quantity and units of measure based on SysML work and probably with the deliverables in R. And so between OASIS and OMG, we have agreed that we will be collaborating on this. And this is totally consistent and in the spirit of the ontology-based standards initiative, and I'm looking forward to that work. That's all I wanted to say. Over to Rosario.
Yes, I work in semantic technologies. I'm from IBM, and I work with my colleague here, Bob Schloss. We've been working for a couple of years in real pragmatic semantic models for smarter cities and from life sciences and so on. But so the question that I had, or maybe the comment, and I would like to get, sort of people's opinion on this, is that, we've all been thinking about standards for interoperability, for reusability of the solution, and is this notion of interoperability, being able to, having one application be able to talk to the other. And, I've been the first one to look at these as a black or white. Either you are part of the standard or you're not part of the standard. But when you're talking about ontologies, there are three levels of integration or coupling, right? We have the vocabulary level. As vocabularies, you can think about ontologies as providing the basic, lexicon for a domain. There is the second, which is as a structured data in terms of the relations. And there is a third that is not, it's very useful, but it's not always used, which is the formalization. What are, treating it as a formal system, as an axiomatic system, what are the kinds of deductions that you can have? So there is kind of a great, now that we're working with ontologies, there's a great area in terms of how these standards play and whether we allow to have these different levels of integration. Does anybody, any of the speakers that have been working with standards have any thoughts on this?
Okay. So anyone want to take Rosario on? So Denise, your hand is up,
yes.
And Michael too. So maybe Denise.
So I would just ask first if Rosario could clarify something for us. When you talk about interoperability between applications, is that what you mean literally, that one application can invoke another application and have it do something, or are you talking about exchanging data between applications?
Very good question. Let's talk about the simplest case, being able to exchange data, input-outputs between, one of the standards, let's say CAP, and your application, be able to talk the language of the standard.
Okay. So I did miss a little bit of that. So were you saying it's about exchanging data?
Yes, it is about exchanging data, being able to create even these maps in a very simple way, right? Because I think that the part that we also need to consider is how these standards are going to be used.
Right.
So just for the exchange of data on application.
Well, I can speak about what the SC32, which is the Data Management and Interchange ISO subcommittee, thinks about this, and that has to do both with what I mentioned earlier in terms of domain-specific, I use the word ontologies, but domain-specific languages, but that's part of it. And then the metadata piece says, so it says our vision is that interoperability between of data, exchange of data that can be understood between applications, that would be achieved through both use of common ontologies and then also use of structures that are similar to describe, at a meta level, that are similar to describe the data. So, for example, if two applications were going to exchange data, we would hope that they would use an ontology that's been registered where the concepts have identifiers, and that they would use a structure to describe the data that makes use of that ontology, and that the structure would be, if what they're exchanging is an information model, then the structure of the information model would follow 19763 part 12. If they're exchanging individual data items and just a list of those data items, we expect the structure of the meaning of those data items to follow 11179, part 3. And then, of course, they would be using an ontology that was specific to the domain. Where it sort of falls short is then, okay, what if two groups are using different ontologies? Well, I mentioned and you picked up on this, that we have a standard in development, part 10, that allows you to record a mapping between the ontologies. So, it's a multi-part answer. The simplest would be, okay, they just agree to exchange a document and they agree on a pre-agreed document format, but I don't know that that's realistic. So to make it more flexible, we're saying exchange a document and in that document follow a standard structure, and then within that structure use standard ontologies that are registered. I don't know if did that make sense?
Yeah. That really makes sense because it shows that we're already thinking of the different levels of standardization and integration with the standard. So I think it's a wonderful starting point there.
What we've seen is that typically we develop an ontology for the particular software applications that are being trying to be integrated or interoperable. And then use the mappings between those application ontologies to assist in the exchange of data between those applications. The idea being that the application ontologies are kind of combinations and specializations of already existing ontologies. And that by using repositories, the hope is that, the mappings between these ontologies are still manual, but the idea with a repository is that it's not just a repository of the ontologies like a big listing, but it's all about the connections. And, the mappings are all about the connections. And that can be done in an offline sort of way as the community builds up these mappings. And then as people use application ontologies, like I say, combine and extend these with the repository ones, then the mappings can start being kind of semi-automatically generated from those, from the previously manually generated ones. So that's kind of the vision that we've been working with. Although there is a slight, kind of caveat as well. I mean, some of the applications that some of the scenarios we've looked at, there's also the issue of syntax. Don't overlook the difficulties of the syntactic side of things. That, I mean, very often, like a knowledge base that one application uses is very different from the syntax that another knowledge base uses. And there can be a lot of work that gets involved in doing that syntactic translation. regardless of how you've done the mappings between, between the semantics of the terms.
Thank you, Michael. Eric?
Yes, I also wanted to respond to Rosario's question. So for ICOM, one of the vision is not just about interoperability or interchange of data between applications, but we also want to solve the integration of different technologies and, in fact, standards. So in the collaboration space, we have standards mostly driven through protocols like email messaging protocol and presence protocols and so forth. They are well standardized and adopted, but we wanted to define a model to harmonize those standards and provide seamless transition between activities in that domain, collaboration domain. So one of the focus is to provide the integrated model. And when we talk about model, we actually extracted those models from a lot of operational aspects in different standards. And then we extracted the model and defined the model mostly as ontology-based model, and that allow us to provide representation in multiple languages and transformation of data among different representations, and therefore can enhance the interoperability. So yes, my comment is that besides interoperability, you might also want to do integration of disjoint or sometimes overlapping standards and use ontology to support that. Thanks.
Thank you, Eric. I know we've run past the clock already. If people don't mind, maybe we'll extend the session for another 10 minutes, starting from now. For those who can't stay, just be aware that we are capturing the whole recording and the chat transcript into a full proceeding that is accessible from the session page in a day or two. So come back and catch up. If you can stay, yes, please stay and let's actively participate in this discussion. Kevin?
Thanks for taking my question. Early in the last presentation, the description was given of how ontologies were being harvested from standards, presumably as unstructured text, and mention was made of the utility of this for dealing with multiple versions of the same standard. And I was wondering, in maintaining the information about versions, what kind of standard was used to record provenance, and specifically, was it the W3C PROV working group output, PROV-O, I think it's called. Thank you.
Ken, you want to take that up?
Provenance was certain.
Oops, we dropped you again. Yeah, we might have to come back to this. Michael, did you also have an answer?
No, because I think that was definitely Ken's kind of metaphor of harvesting them from harvesting standards from text. I was kind of more of the opposite direction, using the standards as the seeds of ontologies. Harvest comes after.
I think he responded in the chat by saying, yes, provenance was captured and checked for consistency with the document. I find a number of inconsistencies.
Yeah, which he did say on his slide,
yes.
Too.
Eric
is here, so maybe Eric.
A lot of consistencies are typos.
I seem to have dropped out.
You seem to have.
Back.
Now you're back, yes.
I'm back now.
I was
now,
just giving a dramatic reading of your text.
Oh,
okay.
Sorry about that, but yeah, I captured provenance, and I even looked at the various standards for this information. There are quite a few, actually. I was attempting to reconcile all of them, but that's an ongoing activity.
Did you employ the W3C provenance ontology at all?
I'm not sure I did that one. I did some others.
Okay. Great, thank you very
much. Send me information about it. I'd be sure to incorporate it.
Will do. Thank you.
Okay. David Witten is up. David?
I wasn't going to ask anything very complicated. I just knew that one of the people presented said that they found an XML parser that was very, very generous in terms of its XML parsing and I just wondered if we could get a link or a description of where that came from, assuming it's open source.
Yeah, it's HTML parser. That's the name, actually, HTML parser.
So Ken, would you be kind enough to maybe put that on the chat board? Maybe, David, I mean, if you could put your question on the chat board, then it's fully we have full context of the question and the answer. Okay, I don't see any hand, but I saw this one question, which I guess is constantly asked whenever common logic is talked about. Bobbin T. Garden asks about tools, and her specific question is, what are the tools that support Cliff modeling? No?
Okay, I can ask that just before I leave here. Yeah, so I'm actually the editor for the new revision of Common Logic within ISO, and one of the things that we've been tasked with is to provide a complete description of all the different Common Logic tool sets and implementations, etc. So this will be coming out shortly. I'm working with Fabian Neuhaus, also at NIST, in collecting this, and I will just write in here the one place that has been collecting information about Common Logic is cl.tamu.edu for Common Logic information. You can find some there. There's not too much there right now, but we will be getting a kind of a comprehensive survey of all existing Common Logic tools very shortly.
Pat has probably dropped out, but I was wondering if anyone here knows if Pat Hayes' CMAP tool fits the bill on the question that Bobbin asked. Does anyone know?
No, we'll have to talk to Pat.
Okay. All right. Last chance to make a remark. Anyone else? No? Lisa, are you back?
I think so. Can you hear me?
Yes. Loud and clear. It's all yours.
Yeah, so I just wanted to thank everybody for participating. I think it was a really nice exchange. I think it's a great start. And want to encourage all of you to join us again on November the 8th. There will be some very specific OMG activities that we discussed then. The work that Mark Linehan and I and other folks have been doing to map SBBR to OWL, I think, takes a similar vein to some of the things that Ken was talking about today. We've specifically focused on capturing annotations to limit lossiness in the transform, and so that may be of interest to folks. And we've captured a ton of annotations and have actually looked at Pravo. So, Kevin, I can talk to you about that offline if you're still there and interested. We aren't using it specifically. We've taken more of an OMG specification process approach to annotations, at least initially, but we're still looking at what Pravo might add, and are also talking with some of the people on the working group for Pravo to stay in touch with them and let them know what our findings are. So stay tuned on that, and also the discussion that we'll have following the SBVR to OWL presentation on the API for KB's activity. I guess that's really a misnomer. API for KBs is an RFP coming out from the OMG. It's been out there for quite a while, asking for specific interfaces. But what the Ontology SIG has been doing is to capture a broader set of requirements and architecture for integration of various kinds of rule engines, reasoners, parsers, and other things in a very coherent ecosystem. And we are in communications with the guys working on the linked data APIs at the W3C and are hoping to kind of bridge a gap with them as part of that work. So there's both the architectural approach, the overall goals, and then the specific API for KB's activity that's now underway that Davide Sotada from Arizona State will be talking about. And so anybody who is available on November the 8th, please join us. And thank you so much for participating.
So that's it. Talk to you all again November 8th. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody.